Good day and welcome. I'm Paul Levoy, Editor-in-Chief of Ascend Magazine.
And I'm Sarah Riven, Government Affairs Director at Thentia.
And this is Week in Brief, your weekly roundup of the biggest news in licensure, regulation, and digital government.
Today we'll be discussing the top stories for the week of May 1st, including a Florida bill to ease licensure requirements, licensing midwifery in Nevada, Montana's moves on regulatory reform, and more.
Sarah, we've spent a lot of time discussing interstate compacts, which seem to be a hot-button issue. And I think there's some news out of Kansas on that topic this week. What can you tell us?
Yeah, that's right, Paul. We have spent some time covering interstate compacts, which tend to be aimed at increasing access to positions for professionals from out of state. Earlier this month, Kansas became the latest member of the Interstate Teacher Mobility Compact.
What does this compact do?
So this compact in particular is actually pretty narrow. It creates pathways to teacher licensure for military personnel and their spouses. Now, I should note this compact requires 10 states to buy into it for it to take effect, and Kansas is only the fourth to join. The other three are Utah, Colorado, and Kentucky, but legislation is pending in about a dozen other states.
How are Kansas stakeholders reacting to this?
So as with many interstate compacts, there does seem to be concern about lowering standards within a regulated profession. So in this particular instance, local educators in Kansas have expressed concern about the quality of teachers that could be coming in. They worry that underqualified educators would have easier access to teaching in Kansas classrooms. But on the other hand, schools have championed the compact as a way to help them fill teaching jobs when they can't find Kansas teachers.
One thing I think is worth adding there is that we just published a comprehensive guide to interstate compacts that our listeners should definitely check out.
Paul, let's shift gears. What's going on with occupational licensure in Florida?
That's right. Lawmakers in Florida are currently deliberating a bill that would ease licensing burdens for out-of-state professionals that want to work in the state. So again, the whole licensing mobility, universal licensure scenario that we talk about from time to time.
Yeah. So in this case, again, licensed workers in one state could move to and work in Florida.
If it is made law, applicants with the right experience, the right qualifications, and a certificate of good standing from another state would indeed qualify for a Florida license. This, their version of universal licensing would be available through different pathways. That includes being licensed by another licensing entity in another state, or based on their work experience in another state or the military, or based on any kind of private certification with work experience in a non-licensing state or the military.
How would it work? Would licensees be able to start work right after moving to Florida?
They would still need a government certification or an actual occupational license, but that would have to be issued by the appropriate licensing board within 90 days of them arriving.
And are there other stipulations? How do they go about getting those licenses?
There's a minimum work experience requirement, and there's also an amendment to the bill that says that Florida licensing boards are able to consider an applicant's professional disciplinary history to determine whether an act of offense is enough to disqualify them from getting a license. So pretty standard things from a licensure standpoint.
Where did the idea for this bill come from? Who's behind it?
The bill, Senate Bill 1364, was presented by State Senator Jay Collins. He has long said that the state has some core gaps in its workforce, and he's added that this bill has the potential to add upwards of 200,000 new licensures through the Department of Business and Professional Regulation. It's also been said that the Florida Department of Health would be expected to have a 75% increase in its workforce in the state.
So what's the status of the bill? What's next?
Well, as I say, it's being deliberated by the Senate. It recently made its way favorably through the Senate Appropriations Committee on Agriculture, Environment, and General Government. So it's currently under consideration by the Senate and will be further discussed in May. Sounds like things are contentious in Nevada over midwifery licensure. What's going on there?
Yeah, so Nevada is the only state in the Western United States that does not regulate the midwifery profession, but lawmakers are looking at changing that. This year, they have been considering Assembly Bill 386, which would establish optional licensure for certified professional midwives. But as you mentioned, this has been a relatively hot button issue.
Can you tell us a bit more about certified professional midwives?
So certified professional midwives train to birth babies in out-of-hospital settings. And these midwife-attended home births make up just a fraction of all deliveries, but the number is rising, so there's increasing attention on this profession.
What is the controversy around licensing midwives?
So there are a few points proponents make related to this need for licensure. They say regulating the industry will provide more transparency and protection for patients who may be interested in hiring a midwife for their birth. They also say the regulation would strengthen the relationships between midwives and medical professionals who tend to be wary of the midwifery profession. And a third argument in favor of the bill is that licensed midwives would then be eligible for Medicaid coverage if that's part of a birth plan. And Medicaid coverage currently covers at least half of Nevada births. So I wanted to note that the National Association of Certified Professional Midwives supports the measure. And in 2021, there was a similar bill introduced by the same assembly member, and it failed in the Senate by just one vote, but it did have bipartisan support. So there are a lot of calls for action on this issue.
So what are the opponents saying about it?
So the Nevada Midwives Association is opposed, and local midwives have expressed several concerns about this bill. In particular, they seem to appreciate freedom from regulation. So their top concern is really that the optional licensure component is just the first step toward mandatory licensure for their profession. They also have a lot of concerns about the structure of the board that would oversee the regulated midwives. Of seven seats established, one would be dedicated to an obstetrician or an advanced practice registered nurse, and another could be filled by a pediatrician. That's different from a lot of other professional regulation where other professions are not involved in the oversight of the regulated body. For instance, plumbers don't regulate electricians. And then another provision that has raised some concerns is that clients would have to sign a form acknowledging their understanding of their care, which to midwives seems to raise a number of red flags.
So what's next for regulating midwives in the state?
So because Assembly Bill 386 would impose fees for licensure, the bill would need a two-thirds majority to pass, which is a relatively big hurdle. It will also need to clear the desk of Governor Joe Lombardo, who has expressed a desire for fewer statewide regulations. Earlier this year, he even called for a review of professional licensure holistically in Nevada. Assembly Bill 386 did pass out of Assembly Committee on Commerce and Labor on April 14th, so it's making its way through the process. So, Paul, why has Montana's governor held a ceremonial signing of 10 bills?
That's right. Governor Greg Gianforte has repeatedly said that one of his top priorities in the states is to reform regulations that he believes are burdensome and outdated. This includes regulations dealing with professional licensing and professional licensing adjacent regulations. So he held a bill signing to showcase a few of these bills, which he says will open the doors of greater opportunity that have been shut by red tape.
So tell us more about what these bills are about.
Well, among these 10 signed bills are House Bill 117, that creates a simplified pathway for retired teachers who want to resume working as substitutes. Then there's House Bill 34, that exempts certain grants from the Montana Department of Natural Resources and Conservation from an environmental review process. And then there's House Bill 266, which does away with a state advisory council on concealed weapon permits. These are just some of the 188 bills considered a part of the governor's red tape relief effort. This ceremonial signing is just a continuation of that.
Seems like a pretty big step in the effort. Are all of the bills law?
Gianforte has signed more than 100 of these bills. They're individually rather small. Many of the bills, including the 10 highlighted, have passed with broad, bipartisan, and sometimes unanimous support. Some of the changes have included eliminating inactive commissions and streamlining applications for state contracts, as well as modernizing rules for issuing public notices. But you'll recall, as I said, these are individually small bills. For example, 117, which I mentioned earlier, is just about creating a simplified pathway for retired teachers. So there's a major part of his red tape relief effort, a keystone, as some have called it. That's House Bill 152. It has not yet been passed. It was pretty sweeping, I should say. It would overhaul the state's occupational licensing rules. It was initially over 200 pages and extensively set out to revise the state's occupational guidelines. However, it was almost completely rewritten through amendments in the House and now has just about 2 pages dealing with licensing rules for military members and spouses. You might recall us chatting about New Hampshire and their efforts to execute sweeping licensure reform a few weeks ago, and how when industry speaks up, those large packages tend to get watered down, just in line with this. Well, that's all we have for you this week. I'm Paul.
And I'm Sarah.
Thanks for listening, and don't forget to sign up for Ascend Magazine's Week in Brief. The link is in the show notes, and subscribe to Ascend Radio.